For the last 3 weeks, we have heard from our brothers and sisters in faith about why they feel it is important to support financially the work of the church. Some have spoken in worship, others have had their thoughts shared via postcards that were sent in the mail. I would like to take this opportunity to commend each and every one of these folks for being willing to share their thoughts on what can be a sensitive topic. And to their great credit, it should be noted that I did not have to twist any arms. To the contrary, each one enthusiastically accepted the call to share his or her own view from the pew, as we have called them. I have been encouraged and challenged by their words, and I hope that the same is true for you. Considering why it is that we give to the work of God through the church is of the utmost importance. In 2008, sociologists Christian Smith, Michael Emerson, and Patricia Snell published a study on Christian stewardship entitled Passing the Plate. Their findings are a call to action for the church in America. According to the study, more than one out of four American Protestants give no money to churches. Evangelical Christians tend to be most generous, but even their giving is nothing to brag about. 36% of the evangelicals report that they give less than 2% of their income. Only about 27% tithe. That is, give 10% of their income to the work of the church. Passing the Plates researchers estimate that American Christians who say that their faith is very important to them and who attend church at least twice a month earn more than $2.5 trillion every year. If these Christians gave away 10% of even their after-tax earnings, they would add a whopping $46 billion to ministry around the world. Yet tithing is practiced by only a few. The median annual giving for an American Christian is about $200, just over 0.5% of after-tax income. Shockingly, 5% of American Christians provide 60% of the money that churches and religious groups use to operate. A small group of truly generous Christian givers, says Passing the Plate authors, are essentially covering for the vast majority of Christians who give nothing or give quite little. Most mainline preachers already know that America's biggest givers, as a percentage of their income, are its lowest income earners. Americans earning less than $10,000 gave 2.3% of their income to churches. And those who earned $70,000 or more gave only 1.2%. Believe it or not, church giving as a percentage of income was higher during the early years of the Great Depression, around 3.5%. Than at any point since. When income went up, we began to give less. The causes for these patterns? Well, first, researchers say that the last number of years of national and global economic fluctuation have been particularly tough on the middle class, the group that gives the most to churches. Fixed costs in households have increased from 54% to 75% in family budgets since the early 1970s. Second, some givers say they don't trust their church's use of the money. Third, and perhaps most fascinating, individual Christians are acting much like their churches are. Relatively little donation money actually moves much of a distance away from the contributors, Smith, Emerson, and Snell write. The money given by the people in the pews is most largely spent on the people in the pews. Only about 3% of money donated to churches and ministries went to aiding or ministering to those outside of the congregation. Finally, Passing the Plate says the major reason Christians do not give is because they are simply not asked to. Tithing, in particular, is seldom mentioned. Though I do believe it is important for us to name and recognize why it is that so many of us do not give or give relatively little to the work of the church, it is likely more helpful to continue our focus on why those of us who give choose to do so. And in sharing, our honest desire is to encourage others to do the same. To be sure, the number of reasons Christians give to the church is as varied as the number of givers. However, over the years, two schools of thought have dominated. Some give out of a sense of duty or obligation. This is often a sense that has been ingrained in them by parents, grandparents, and mentors in the faith and the church. We have a duty, a moral obligation, they might say, to give to the church because God commands it, or because we have benefited from the giving of those who came before, and the torch has been handed down for us to carry. There comes with giving a great sense of fulfillment. I have done my part and can rightfully claim my place among the long line of faithful Christians who have given generously to the work of the kingdom. The handing down of this legacy is very important to those who give for these reasons, and we owe them a great deal of gratitude for the inheritance that we enjoy this day. Still others give out of a deep sense of gratitude. God has given me so much and has only asked for but a portion in return, they say. It is with a thankful heart that I give to the church. Those who give out of gratitude are thankful for the many ways they have personally benefited from the ministries of the church, and thus want for others to benefit as well. Of course, as complex persons, many give out of a sense of both duty and gratitude. However, there may be another way still, a way that comes from our Old Testament passage for today from Leviticus, and how, in particular, it is part of a much bigger picture. Leviticus is usually the first book of the Bible to which I direct people who struggle with insomnia. Start reading in chapter 1, and you'll likely be asleep by the time you get to chapter 2. But all kidding aside, Leviticus is where we turn to find the fullest laying out of the law that God gave the people of Israel. A law encapsulated in the Ten Commandments, but parsed out in vivid detail in the 27 chapters of Leviticus, and again in the 34 chapters of Deuteronomy. A law that includes commands to honor your father and mother, as well as detailed instructions on how to make proper offerings and sacrifices. When you present a grain offering baked in the oven, it shall be of choice flour, unleavened cakes mixed with oil, or unleavened wafers spread with oil. If your offering is in grain is prepared on a griddle, it shall be of choice flour mixed with oil, unleavened. Break it into pieces and pour oil on it. It is a grain offering. If your offering is grain prepared in a pan, you get the point. This law was given not as a means for God to impose God's will upon the people, but rather as a means to set them apart, to let them know and the world know that these truly are the people of God. And though not necessarily arguable for all of the law, a great portion of the law simply makes sense for living. In other words, many rules and regulations of Leviticus provide a better way of life for those who adhere to them, including the laws governing the use of material possessions, like those found here in the 27th chapter. All tithes from the land, whether the seed from the ground or the fruit from the tree, are the Lord's, and they are holy to the Lord. If persons wish to redeem any of their tithes, they must add one-fifth to them. All tithes of herd and flock, every tenth one that passes under the shepherd's staff, shall be holy to the Lord. Let no one inquire whether it is good or bad, or make substitution for it. If one makes substitution for it, then both it and the substitute shall be holy and cannot be redeemed. The truth is, no one understands us better than our God, the one who created us, redeems us, and sustains us. God knows the adverse effects the acquisition of material possessions and wealth can have on our broken lives and on this world. God understands and longs for us to understand as well the ways in which money can lead us far from the path of faith, far from the abundant lives that Christ came to give to us. And so God's commands to give a portion, a not insignificant portion, of our wealth to the work of the church is not simply because God is a miser or desires to ruin our fun. To the contrary, our God understands how wealth unchecked can ruin our lives and ruin our world. So then, the call to tithe, to give, really is, and I am not being trite here, for our own good. Though we might resist this position, perhaps vehemently, it is true. Wealth, material possessions, have the great potential to corrupt and to lead us astray. The scriptural command to tithe, to give, is with our own benefit in mind. So whether you choose to give out of duty, out of gratitude, or as a means to avoid the pitfalls of wealth, or some combination of these and other reasons, what is important most of all is that you give. God is not the least bit shy about that in the Old Testament, and Jesus is not the least bit shy about it either in the New Testament. Giving to the work of the church is of paramount importance to the life of the faith. All of what I have said is true and based on scriptural witness. And perhaps that is enough to convince you of the need to give and to continually grow in your giving. However, if the Pass the Plate study shows us anything, it is that for better or for worse, many of you will choose to give or not give, not simply based on scriptural witness, but on other factors, specifically the four mentioned in the study: the realities of the economy, level of trust in the church's use of money, the scope of the effect of the ministries funded, and the presence or lack of the church's teaching on tithing. Allow me, if you will, to address each factor briefly. Clearly, there is little, if anything, we can do as a church to change our economy. We know that many have felt the sting of the downturns over the last few years. And even through that time, many of you remained faithful in your giving and even grew. And for that, we are thankful. We are also thankful that the economy has recovered some and that there is reason to be hopeful going forward. But regardless of the current state of the economy, I urge you to consider making or maintaining a focus on giving to the work that we do here in God's name. The returns on investment are a bit more stable here and eternal in nature. Now, I have clearly not been a part of this faith community nearly as long as many of you, and do not have the history that some of you have. As a representative of the leadership of the church, though, I want to take this opportunity to apologize for any times over the years that the finances of the church, the monies with which you entrust us as leaders, have not been handled well or used to support worthwhile ministries. With that said, I can say with great confidence that this season of our life together is marked by excellent leadership and a sound approach to the management of our funds. We are doing our best to make the best use of the monies with which you entrust us. We strive daily to make the right decisions that will put us in an increasingly better place from which to worship and to serve our God. And we are committed to constantly improving the communication about the use of our church funds. You have my word that we are striving to be faithful not only to God, but to you, the members of Christ Memorial Presbyterian Church, and to the world, which desperately needs this treasure that we have. Frankly, I was shocked to read in the study that only about 3% of money donated to churches and ministries went to aiding or ministering to those outside of the congregation. And I am equally proud to say that CMPC has a long tradition of supporting programs and ministries outside of these walls that aid and minister to our brothers and sisters around the community, the city, the region, the nation, and the world. This year alone, more than 10% of our operating budget will go to supporting local, national, and global missions. We believe a church turned outward will grow internally in spirit and in number. As I urge you to consider tithing to the church, I think it is of the utmost importance that you know that the church tithes as well. One of the most common complaints those who are unhappy with their church will make is that they are always asking for money. Though an entire sermon could be devoted to analyzing this complaint, suffice it to say that in most cases there are both truth and hyperbole in this statement. Though I agree it is not healthy for any church to always be asking for money, I do think it is imperative for a church to always be talking about money. There is a small but significant difference here. If we truly desire to model our lives after the witness we find in the scriptures, then we need to be willing to give a proper proportion of our attention to one of the most common topics addressed therein: the use of possessions and of wealth. To that end, I pledge that we will strive to do a better job of consistently educating the congregation on the importance of material and wealth management and the need to give. Despite what some might say, considering the scriptural witness, the church is not the last place we should talk about money. If anything, it is the place we should talk about money, to challenge one another to be good stewards of these gifts that we have been given by God. I would like to close with a poignant story. Tony Campolo, sociology professor at Eastern Baptist College and popular speaker, told of his experience one year at a women's conference where he was making a major address. At the point in the program when the women were being challenged with a significant financial goal for their mission projects, the chairperson for the day turned to Dr. Campolo and asked him if he would pray for God's blessing upon the women as they considered what they might do to achieve their goal. To her utter surprise, Dr. Campolo came to the podium and graciously declined her invitation. "You already have the resources necessary to complete this mission project right here within this room," he continued. "It would be inappropriate to ask God's blessing when God has already blessed you with abundance and the means to achieve this goal. The necessary gifts are in your hands. As soon as we take the offering and underwrite this mission project, we will thank God for freeing us to be generous, responsible, and accountable stewards that we are called to be as Christian disciples." When the offering was taken, the mission challenge was oversubscribed, and Dr. Campolo led a joyous prayer of thanksgiving for God's abundant blessing and for the faithful stewardship of God's people. Friends, we live in an inordinately blessed corner of the garden, annually one of the wealthiest counties in the wealthiest nation in the world. We too have the resources necessary to complete this mission project right here within this room. As we come together next Sunday to commit our financial pledges to the work of this church, I encourage you to consider giving abundantly to the work that God is doing in our midst. These are indeed exciting times in our life together. In them, some can see glimpses of incredible times in our past. And together, we can all see, with eyes of faith, the future hope, the future filled with hope here. To get there, we will need everyone to give abundantly and sacrificially. For in the words of St. Paul, God is able to provide you with every blessing and abundance, so that by always having enough of everything, you may share abundantly in every good work. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.